There's a reason why Serbia's Novak Djokovic is the world's number one men's tennis player. He just keeps on winning and winning. The pattern continued yesterday in Djokovic's opening match against Lithuanian Ricardas Berankis at the U.S. Open in New York. Djokovic fired off 10 aces. One commentator said he didn't even break a sweat. Lauren Collins profiles Novak Djokovic in this week's New Yorker, and it's a little surprising he's number one, Lauren. Tennis was never really a big thing in his native Serbia, and his parents ran a pizzeria.
That's right. I mean, the Djokovic's, they were the owners of a pizza shop and snack bar in Serbia, and so young Novak was sort of scrubbing dishes and dolloping Nutella on crepes, and even one really snowy summer helping his father carve a bench out of ice. But for one reason or another, the government built a tennis complex, you know, which I think consisted of a few courts across the street from the pizza parlor. Novak was hanging around and pressing his nose up to the chain link fence, finally convinced a coach to take him into a clinic. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, as he tells it, he was hooked. So he was pretty young. I mean, I think he was six when he declared to his parents that he was going to be number one in the world and win Wimbledon, both of which he did.
And then the war in the former Yugoslavia rolls in. How did that affect the young Djokovic's game?
Well, I'm not sure how it affected his game, but it certainly affected his family and I think his sense that he wanted to do something big and sort of redeem all the sacrifices that his family had made. He writes about it in his book. And when the bombing started, the family was living in Belgrade. He writes that they, you know, every night when the air raid sirens started going off, they would run across to his aunt's apartment, which had a bomb shelter. And they spent night after night, you know, huddled together, praying and scared. But he also tells that he kept up his tennis game during that time. And they would often look to play tennis near a site that had just recently been bombed, figuring that maybe it wouldn't be a target again very soon.
Trace the arc of his game. He's had to make some adjustments over the years, more recently including his coach and his diet, a gluten-free diet, which he says is kind of a miracle cure for him, and changed him radically. How much has he had to reinvent himself?
Well, so he entered the top 100 in 2005 at the age of 18. He was doing pretty well. He cracked sort of the elite level of the game very early, but then plateaued. He was originally known as this sort of pest, a guy who's resolve and whose game would falter at crucial moments. I mean, really just a kind of meltdown artist who would lose it. He describes it as in his autobiography as something called the curse, these seizures that would descend on him seemingly out of nowhere. And it would feel like concrete was being poured in his legs and somebody's pinching his nose and he can't breathe. Now, his competitors didn't quite see it this way. There was a moment when Andy Roddick was getting ready to play him in the U.S. Open one year. And Novak was complaining of, I think, injuries to his left and his right ankle. And that was too much for Roddick, who then, in a press conference, accused him of probably also suffering from anthrax and from bird flu.
Right. Big hypochondriac.
Right, exactly. But so Djokovic was ranked third in 2008, 2009, 2010. And no matter what he did, and he did tons of things, he tried all training regimens. He moved his training camp to Abu Dhabi to try to acclimate to the heat, tried new coaches, you know, cycled through a bunch of different experiments and could not break through, could not, you know, bust up this sort of duopoly that Nadal and Federer had the game, you know, in a chokehold. Anyway, the way he tells it, his sort of salvation came in the unlikeliest of places, which was a Serbian doctor, an adherent of Chinese traditional medicine, who was watching television, watching Djokovic play one day, and decided that what he was suffering from was a gluten allergy, essentially. So anyway, in 2011, Djokovic cut gluten out of his diet. And, you know, for him, this wasn't only an improvement in his diet and fitness, but it was a complete full body transformation, the way he tells it.
Well, whatever happened to him, he's reached quite a few Grand Slam semifinals, and many expect him to go far at the U.S. Open. Let's listen to what he had to say after yesterday's match in Flushing when he was asked about his current level of confidence.
These are the most important tournaments we have in this sport, and this is where you want to to win trophies. It's all the attention of the sport world is directed to these tournaments, and this is the last Grand Slam of the year, and I have high expectations for myself, and there is no difference in my approach this year than in the last few years. And knowing that I've done so well in past years, had such a good record, gives me enough reason to have this confident and optimistic approach.
A pretty straightforward answer there from number one Novak Djokovic at a press conference yesterday. He's also, Lauren Collins, got a reputation as a practical joker, and it seems, I guess, every generation of tennis pros has to have their colorful player, whether it's McEnroe or Andre Agassi. Djokovic has his own style as a colorful player. What makes him stand out?
He is an incorrigible ham. As I wrote in the piece, you know, he seems like the kind of guy who would be dying to be picked for audience participation in a magic show. And you know, recently before Wimbledon, he was playing an exhibition match and he ripped off his shirt and swung it around his head and started gyrating his hips and then challenged his opponent to sort of match him in a striptease. And, you know, he's always sort of ripping off his shirt or, you know, delving into his racket bag and extracting an Afro wig and then doing a disco dance to get lucky or whatever have you. But he's definitely definitely an exhibitionist and likes to, you know, get the crowd laughing and sort of participating in ways other than just politely clapping on, you know, his shots from the baseline. What's interesting about his impressions is, you know, they are really sort of intelligently observed and immediately recognizable. So, you know, even though they were kind of silly and goofy, I think they also hint at what's a sort of more than slapstick intelligence and perception of the people around him.
Well, Djokovic may be number one, and he may be kind of a class clown, but here's something that you point out, Lauren, in your story. The better he does, the less he is liked. So as number one, does Djokovic have any fans?
The paradox of Djokovic is that he sort of ruined the script. You know, Nadal and Federer have been sort of the leading men in this blockbuster buddy film for the past 10 years in tennis. I mean, they have one of the greatest rivalries in the history of tennis and of sports, period. So along comes Djokovic, this, you know, self-described goofy kid from Serbia. And I think for a long time, it was hard for people to see where he fit in. But as he's matured, you know, I think people are really starting to come around to him. For instance, after he lost to Andy Murray in Wimbledon last month, he gave a really sort of gracious, you know, concession speech of sorts and got a very good response to that.
Yeah, I remember that. So now we're at the U.S. Open. Is there anyone there to knock Djokovic off his block? I mean, does Rafa Nadal or Roger Federer or Andy Murray have it in them to stop him?
I think so. I mean, that's what's exciting about men's tennis right now. And even Djokovic said to me, I didn't put this in the piece, but he said, you know, really there are six or seven guys. It's a deeper field in the men's game than at any time for probably the past decade. I mean, Murray can beat him. Nadal can beat him and has the last two times they've played. Del Potro can beat him. There, you know, I think he has a good chance and he'd very much like to round out the year with a Grand Slam victory, considering he started strong at the Australian and then faltered probably, you know, earlier than he would have liked at the French with that heartbreaking loss to Nadal and then at Wimbledon with the hometown favorite Murray. But, you know, he can win the U.S. Open, so can any number of other people. So I think it'll be an exciting tournament.
Lauren, do you play tennis?
I do, although I haven't played very recently.
I'm just wondering if you had a chance to hit with Djokovic while you were doing this profile.
No, I wouldn't have ventured that.
You think he could return his serve?
Probably not. No, I don't even. No, I'm sure I couldn't. I'm sure I couldn't even return his second serve.
It's grease lightning, both of them, isn't it?
Right.
Lauren Collins profiles the world's number one ranked tennis player, Novak Djokovic, in this week's New Yorker. Lauren, great to speak with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.